At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to another edition of Ringside Chaos. I'm the Bear of Texas. Let's welcome back the founder and president and CEO of Pain Train Python Productions himself. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the master of mayhem, Ricky Litwinkwich. Ricky, it's time to recap AEW Full Gear, and I understand that you have something that you want to get off your chest, sir.
I should have taken 5 naps during this pay-per-view. I'm not even going to... Listen, we did the watch-along last night. We watched... Well, I know I watched. I know I didn't have everybody on for the whole thing, but I watched the pre-show, which started at 6:30 for a event that did not fucking start till 8 o'clock. Okay. And as the main part of the card came on, our discussion was that matches should have been put in different spots than what the card was.
Absolutely.
And to me, I think I can replicate how the fans felt during this show last night, where some matches should have been quicker than others. Some matches probably shouldn't have been on the card at all, to be honest with you. And secondly, 12 matches from 6:30 till around midnight. Word of advice to AEW. Stop overloading your fucking pay-per-views. They get boring. They become tedious. You end up finding your way, walking away from watching what you're watching because you're bored. It really felt completely fucking dragged out.
So basically, right off the bat, you are obviously not, you're obviously not thrilled. You're very, very dissatisfied.
Yes. Yes, I was. I'm not going to say that there weren't some good matches on the card. There were some good matches on the card. Where they were again, like, I think, killed a lot of stuff. And you could definitely tell, and I made the observation and everybody thought I was nuts, but you could tell when you hear the crowd noise and don't see the crowd moving.
Yeah.
And you know when a match is not working well, aka WWE, where they pipe in noise. That happened quite a few times during this pay-per-view. And you can pinpoint which matches there were.
Yeah,
when they were doing it. So
when the crowd is quiet and the promotion goes into desperation mode and they got to do that thing, that's a mind blow right there. And I don't like it.
Well, to just get some of the heat off of this, okay? We did see in the pre-show the Anna Jay Deonna Purrazzo match, which I thought was okay. I'm not giving that anything more than like a 7.5 because it was on the pre-show.
Right.
All right.
And I'm disappointed how Anna Jay's been booked since her return to Japan. I really am.
Well, you know what? Like, this is the problem again with AEW. They have a 152 person roster. For them to have 12 matches to try to feature people on the card, I hate to say it, some people need to get demoted to the fucking pre-show. That's the only way you're getting seen on TV. Let's be honest.
But Anna Jay does not deserve to be demoted to pre-show.
No, she doesn't. But again,
neither does
being the fact that, you know, they just put people on there, you know, just to, again, fill space. So, yeah. It is what it is. But pre-show with that, yeah. Not gonna lie when I tell you that, you know, it was a good match.
Yeah.
Once there was interference from outside, you knew Anna Jay was winning. So it's kind of a gimme, you know. Like you're like, all right, whatever. Like shit happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The second match was a tag team match, I believe,
Yeah, it was the four-way match for the World Tag AEW Tag Team
title. I thought that was the... No, that wasn't that. That was the beginning of the pay-per-view.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. My bad. Yeah, that was actually the first match on the main card. The second match was a four-way match, yeah, and which Buddy Matthews won.
Yes, that was actually a pretty good match. That was probably the best match on the pre-show.
Yeah.
So if I really wanted to kind of give rating on it, I would give it probably about like an 8. Because it's pre-show. That's something that's supposed to warm you up to get into the pay-per-view.
Right, right.
Not the horrendous bullshit that we got to see in that lovely QT Marshall versus The Boom. It was fucking pathetic.
I mean... Carney match. I don't even know what to say. I really
Carney
don't.
Carney match written all over it. Is the way I got to say it. It was a carny match. There was not really very much comedy that came out of it. I'm not saying this to be an idiot or demeaning or whatever. But showing the little kid doing the timekeeping and the bell ringing made me want to throw up. Not going to lie. Again, a carny match is not going to build up the beginning of your show. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, this is what kind of irked me a little bit. And to focus on somebody that nobody's ever even heard of, that they made this big joke of the Rizzler. Like, nobody even knew who the freaking guy was that freaking Marshall was fighting. You only had to have known him from Jersey. You didn't know him from anything else. And so you saw him 3 weeks before the pay-per-view was on. Like, give me a break. So, the pre-show was kind of bad. I'm not gonna lie, the pre-show was kind of bad.
It's a shame, too, but... What really disappoints me is Anna Jay working the pre-show when she should be on the main show. I mean, and the fact that she's coming off, you know, challenging Mariah May for the title, and then she's on the pre-show at the pay-per-view. That does not sit well with me. But of course, people could say that's easy for me to say because I'm a big fan of Anna Jay. I mean, okay, yeah, but at the same time, that. All that momentum after that wonderful run in Japan.
Listen, you know what? All I gotta say is this: pre-show, in the opinion of a person who's watching the pre-show, I don't want to feel kind of let down when the first match starts. Second off, they're doing the introductions during technically the last 2.5 minutes of the pre-show,
right?
And then they run their opener. And then all of a sudden now you have the fatal four-way for the tag team titles. Obviously, this had to have been an obvious pick. If you were going into predictions into this whole deal, yes, you have the House of Black. Yes, you have the runners in this. Okay? Obviously the tag team champions. And then Bowens and Caster in this match. Okay? If you didn't pick Private Party to win, you're an idiot. They've only held the titles for a little over two weeks. If they would have lost, they would have been legitimately the shortest reigning ever AEW champions.
Which would have been one of the dumbest things AEW did.
Exactly.
Because it took them so long to put the belts on Private Party.
You know what? I think because of the fact that with a lot of the storylines that were coming around that the Young Bucks had kind of used up all their dates for the year and their contract, that they kind of legitimately said, hey, like, we can do this because now you're not going to see them for the rest of the year. You're not going to see them till Wrestle Kingdom. So you write them off that way. That legit cuts off whatever their contract would be.
Right.
It's all fine and good.
And once again, Private Party, the Young Bucks put them over just like when AEW started back in the fall of 2019 in that tournament to crown the inaugural tag team champions, the Young Bucks put Private Party over, which was a hell of a match. I remember it like it was yesterday, especially the finish.
But at this also point, the one fatal thing that they did roll with this now is there is going to be some extreme tension in the Acclaimed. I see somehow... Because of the way that things happened in this match, story tells for the breakup of the Acclaimed. That's key. If not a lot of people really paid attention to what was going on in the match, Caster was having the ego problem. Bowens is trying to keep him intact. Billy Gunn, as usual, having to direct traffic, and with Bowens taking the fall, that's definitely going to put something going into the Acclaimed. You left the teams of the Outrunners strong. You left the Kings of the Black Throne strong. And you have Private Party being the Acclaimed. And I'm happy with this. Because now, for future, it brings storyline. But here's where it kind of went all wrong. And this is where I knew things were kind of being messed up. We go from this fatal four-way to MJF and Roderick Strong. This is where AEW is starting, again, should have rearranged the card.
Yeah, I agree.
Because they lost steam in this. They were piping in crowd noise. People were not into this match this early.
No.
If they would have had it built up a little bit, like two or three matches afterwards, I would have said, yeah, that's good. But that match should have not been the second one. You know you're going to have a run-in from Adam Cole. Okay? You're going to have another run-in from Kyle O'Reilly. You bring the crowd up a little bit more with these two guys coming in because you know not only is MJF going to squish on the match on Roderick Strong, you know he's going to lose because they want to build up the Adam Cole MJF storyline still. Just right. A little bit more. I think they kind of lost it. The action was there, but the crowd wasn't into it.
I agree, and to be honest with you, the finish of the match?
I mean, I think the end of the end of the match period was just a quick, okay, we need to get out of here, because this match probably could have gone a little bit longer than it did. I think this match went like 7 minutes, 8 minutes tops, and they were already blowing off to another match.
It actually went about 14 minutes, to be honest.
Yeah, but 14 minutes of actual action.
Right, okay, yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? But the crowd still wasn't, the crowd still wasn't majorly invested into it.
And you can tell it was obvious too, right?
Yes.
Unless I'm just a complete idiot, as some people like to say.
I mean, you go from that one to then Mercedes Moné and Chris Statlander.
I think that's a match that really ran over. And this is
I don't think it ran over. I think at this point, obviously, Moné going over as the champion may be the right decision. But then again, I'm going to be honest with you. She's done nothing, absolutely nothing, to really be a draw. Like she said in a promo, she's not even on the side of one of the production trucks. So if you're not on the side of the production truck, and you're not really giving the crowd or anybody watching like this spark, then at some point in the near future, I think she needs to lose the title.
Right.
Statlander probably would have been the best one to put the title on because she could draw a crowd.
Right. But and we've talked about this before, but you know the way they're handling Camille, I'm not happy about that at all.
Listen, she was a massively dominant woman in NWA.
She's a former NWA Women's Champion.
She's probably, I think, the longest NWA Women's Champion history.
I believe so, yeah.
They are making her look wimpy. And, top it all off, she wasn't even at ringside for this match. Regardless of the arm injury, because she's still, you know, following Moné around. But again, what have you turned her into? She's not as dominant. If she had a better match against Statlander, I think she should have lost Strong. But she's not been strong whatsoever.
Which again,
so that kind of makes me wonder, where are the writers really going with Camille? Like, what are they really doing?
Right. I mean, as you said, you know, she's basically now been, you know, reduced to just like a goofy sidekick. Or I don't know if I should say sidekick or butler. I mean, whatever you want to label it, I'm unhappy about it because Camille, she deserves better.
And I disagree with the grading that Yahoo Sports gave for this match. They gave this match an A+.
Are you serious?
What? Yes, they gave it an A+. I do not see this as an A+.
What about Bleacher Report? I mean, Bleacher Report, I mean, those grades are the ones, you know, people say have the most credibility.
But again, like, I didn't see this as an A+ match.
I mean,
there were botches in this match. I'm not going to lie to tell you, but
obvious.
You know what?
It was obvious.
But again, I don't see this as an A+ match. And I don't agree with the grade that they gave the next match after that, which is, again, why I said at a lot of points the card should have been changed around.
Well, what grade do you give the Mercedes Moné and Statlander match?
A B+ at tops.
And that's being nice. Honestly, I was going to go B-.
A B+ at tops.
Okay. Reasonable.
But we go from what I would say is a B+ to probably the most boring match on the card. Definitely not a match of the night rating whatsoever. To Hangman Adam Page versus Jay White. Yahoo Sports gave this a B+. I'd give this a C-. This match dragged out way too much.
Which is it's a damn shame, because I have a lot of respect and appreciation for Hangman Adam Page and Jay White.
I do, but again, like, it dragged out way too much.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, we've talked about this before, but you know how many conversations we had about the potential biggest AEW botch ever? You know, some of the listeners have said that, you know, we got to consider Jay White one of them, especially because of the illustrious career in Japan.
I love their analysis. I'm gonna quote Yahoo Sports on their analysis.
Okay.
And then I'm going to feed off of that.
Go ahead.
Analysis. This was a really good match with great action and storytelling. My retort? Bullshit. The problem is we've seen it before, and I generally don't know where they're going with either Page or White moving forward. Both are too good to be mirrored in mid-card feuds with little to no stakes, and then both got involved in a messy finish to the night. If you just watch Bell to Bell, you'll be thoroughly entertained. My retort, WTF were you watching? Were you watching Disney cartoons while you were watching this match? Because I was not entertained. I was not. To see the multiple uses of improperly done ankle locks, which I called out while we were live streaming the show yesterday. You gotta be kidding me. And knowing the fact that Jay White has beaten him 4 out of 5 career matches, did you not really know what the outcome was going
to
be?
And this goes back to Japan, right?
Yes. They ranked this a B+. I ranked it a C-. I legitimately wanted to get up and bang my head into my own door. Then watch this. I'm not joking. It was boring.
Yeah, which again, I think it's very painful for both of us, because again, you and I have a lot of respect and admiration and appreciation for both guys, for Jay White and for Hangman Adam Page. I mean, you've been watching Adam Page since before AEW.
You got to remember, Adam Page originally was in Ring of Honor at one point.
He was, yeah. Ring
he
of
was
Honor,
very raw.
Then Japan, and then yeah.
And then now back to the States.
Did you know that he was a school teacher before he started mm-hmm. full time in Japan? Yeah. I think he taught communications or journalism. He's a graduate out of Virginia Tech.
I'm going to lie. Up till this point, like, I had lost a tremendous amount of hope for the pay-per-view. I had to sit through, I gave it a B+. But the Moné match with Statlander kind of deflated me a little bit. Then you come up to the Page Hangman show, the Adam Page Jay White match, and you deflated me even more. Like, I had completely lost steam in trying to watch this. But I did say, and I think this was probably going to be match of the night, was Fletcher and Ospreay. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. These two guys were...
Especially the story.
The story went the way I think it was supposed to go. Like, I really feel now that you can let Ospreay take a decent break after this.
Right.
If they push the storyline more, they got to give it a little bit of air to breathe. When you start the fire, you got to let it progress.
Right.
Kyle Fletcher winning I think is huge.
Yeah. And you know what? Kyle Fletcher had to go over in this one.
He had to. And I especially think, again,
if we've known the storyline about, you know, the betrayal and everything and the promo. We saw that promo. I mean, I shared on Twitter. Like, we saw the promo of the match being accepted. I mean, that was huge. Especially the story how Ospreay tells Fletcher what happened during the pandemic and all that. So yeah, Fletcher had to get over. And as you said, yeah, Ospreay is obviously going to take some time off. I would imagine he's probably going to come back next year.
I wouldn't say that. You got to give him a few weeks because they have another pay-per-view coming up at the end of December, where you're going to have to, again, you're going to have to figure out star power.
Right.
I think that's the major concern I had with this. Like, the booking, I thought would be okay. Length of match. You'll look at this match here, which was 24 minutes long, which, again, there was action from bell to bell. That's what you really want in a 24-minute match. You want action across the board. And these guys push themselves way past limits that I think a lot of people would be like, yeah, no, I ain't doing that. But compared to the 20-minute match of freaking Adam Page and Jay White, I obviously would have got a little bit more excited knowing the fact that this match was happening. Two high flyers that legit throw massive shit to the wall. Massive shit to the wall. And they make everything work. This match was to me the match of the night.
Right.
Knowing what the rest of the card was, which we then go from Fletcher and Ospreay to the only title change of the night. Jack Perry versus Daniel Garcia. This wasn't completely a lackluster match. It just goes to show now that Jack Perry is turned into a sicko because he loves now taking punishment, like not like the Jungle Boy character. Taking the strap off of him right now releases him for more commitments, which also went to go to show a little bit more of the downfall of the Elite. Young Bucks lose. Now Jack Perry loses, and storyline later for the other title to drop from the Rainmaker, that's
Okada.
The fall, the decline of the Elite. But also well-deserved, Daniel Garcia had to have the W.
Once again, the story, the build-up, yeah.
And especially all of the little bit of the torture bits showing that Daniel Garcia now is on the level of a guy like Jack Perry, who changed himself to the scapegoat character coming back from New Japan. This is going to be a good feud if they somehow carry it on a little bit more. I can see two more matches out of this, but these two guys do work well together. They're around the same age. They bring persona that I think a lot of guys that either are not currently running on the roster or guys that are on the roster, they bring the noise.
They did. I mean, I was actually pretty surprised to see Jack Perry drop the belt. I mean, in my case, I'm not sure what's more surprising, him dropping the belt or him losing by submission.
I think, again, like, you can't have Okada and Jack Perry having titles and still kind of carrying on the Elite name without the Young Bucks.
Right, I agree.
The only one in longevity, because he's a bigger money player, would be Okada. You could keep the belt on Okada for a little while, because everybody gets a kick out of this new bitch persona that he put up. I kind of like it. The heel persona for him is really good. Man, a few words. Throw in the word bitch. You keep the crowd entertained. He's not truly a heel. He's like a tweener right now. You're still going to cheer him regardless. And that was kind of a weird thing when you added him to the Elite. Jack Perry, on the other hand, was on the level with the Young Bucks.
He was, yeah.
So the general shrinkage of the Elite is where the AEW is kind of going until you see the Young Bucks come back. You see a Kenny Omega come back. Then you could kind of like rearrange what the Elite is. But to me, Now you kind of look at the next three matches. I'm not gonna lie when I tell you, okay? Obviously the finish to the AEW International Championship match kind of is bad. It's kind of bad. Way the match ended, prototypical Takeshita and the bald idiot's name. I can't remember his name right now. Don Callis. Don Callis. Okay.
Not Rick.
Obviously, you know he's going to somehow get involved in a finish if his guy is up there on storyline or whatever. And he has this new Monsters faction, which, you know, you got to keep strong because now it's Fletcher and Takeshita and Brian Cage and Lance Archer and whoever else he's going to get his grubby little hands on. Having Ricochet take the fall, that's a little sketchy on my part. You brought him in with all of this earth, wind, and fire, and then you squash him with Takeshita? Really? I don't see that as a good deal. Sorry.
I think, yeah, Ricochet losing like that, yeah, that's definitely bad.
But this was kind of a 19-minute match where I guess if you were going to have Takeshita go over, chop it down by 5 minutes. Give me under 15 minutes and give me a little bit of extra breathing room.
Did this match have a little bit of steam? 10 minutes would have made sense. 10 to 12
the
minutes.
The match had steam, but for the length of the match, I think it was, again, a little too long to tell the story.
Right.
Now, moving to the last two. 13 minutes for Bobby Lashley and Swerve Strickland. This is a match that did not start off well. Yes, crowd was in it with Swerve, but it did not make Lashley look strong. That was my problem. It made me feel like Lashley struggled to beat Swerve. I'm not bashing Swerve, but if you're bringing in the Hurt Corporation and you're trying to book Lashley as, again,
the Almighty.
I'm sorry, you got to kind of squash Swerve. He doesn't deserve it, but it looks like Lashley struggled the entire time through this match. That is bad storytelling. It's bad. Again, 3 minutes over, 10 minutes. I'm sorry, you kind of got to squash Swerve a little bit. Make Swerve come back stronger the next one. So you could do a 2 out of 3. And make the storyline a little bit better. But like I also said prior, though, you have a breakup of the Acclaimed. Maybe Max Caster is saying, hey, I'm cashing in my MVP card. And he's going to go to the Hurt Corporation. Possible builder. I don't know. But Lashley, again, not looking strong. I can't say B the way Yahoo Sports did. B minus, C plus, and you put this on right before the main event.
It's a shame that, as you explain it, how the whole thing with Bobby Lashley, I mean, the struggles and whatnot, it's a shame. I mean, some would say that he couldn't get over it if that's the case.
I like the fact at the the post-event presser, it showed that the crowd was into the whole Hurt Corporation thing. Now that it's possibly going to build up some steam, it's possibly going to grow. You know, like, I'm kind of, at that point, okay with it.
The Hurt Syndicate thing, it has to work, or else it's... Wouldn't be good. Wouldn't be good for all of them. Wouldn't it be good for Swerve and Prince Nana as well? All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ringside Chaos. I'm the Bear of Texas alongside Ricky Litwinkiewicz, a.k.a. the Master of Mayhem. We are recapping AEW Full Gear. We apologize for the pause, but something came up that we had to stop. But here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Ricky, I think you were finishing out talking about the match between Swerve Strickland and Bobby Lashley.
Yeah, again, I really do think at some points, even in retrospect, again, I don't know what people were seeing. Like, I'm rereading a lot of stuff that people were saying. Again, struggle would be the only word that I would say that this match went. Now we get into the meat and potatoes of Full Gear 2024. Orange Cassidy, seen as the one of probably AEW's biggest gimmicks. He's a gimmick guy.
He is, and I love it.
But as time has gone on, now with the whole John Moxley Death Riders era, no more BCC. They are the Death Riders. They are the ass kickers of AEW. There's no better way to phrase it than the ass kickers of AEW. And you see Cassidy finally reach the dark side. Starting to wear black. The shades are coming off more. His moveset starting to get more aggressive. It's kind of like with Moxley running this storyline on his own. And I don't think a lot of people have known this. John Moxley has created this storyline with Bryan Danielson kind of giving the feedback on how this is going. This is a tag team storyline that if somebody tells me, oh, this is like NWO in the beginning of WCW, the dark days of the Helmsley McMahon era and the Attitude era. No, it's not close. It's not close, for the fact being is that both companies' creative did that storyline. This is Moxley running his own storyline, which I'm in touch with. And he is spreading a sickness across AEW. He's bringing guys who were, I'm going to assimilate it to Prim and Proper, to being the black leather roughneck style. Like he's opened Pandora's box. And I'm going to tell you, I was a fan of this match. I was a fan of this match. I cannot say that Orange Cassidy doesn't come out of this strong. Granted, you're going to have Moxley winning the match, so you can carry on the storyline, can continue to bring out the sickness more, that more aggressive style out of guys like an Orange Cassidy. And it was in there. Cassidy was a bloody mess at the end of this match. There's not very many times you get to see a guy like an Orange Cassidy bleed during a pay-per-view. I was a fan of this. I'm not saying it was match of the night because you knew the outcome of it. You didn't know what it was going to build of. But there was brutality in this match, and I liked it. However, once again, AEW drops the ball. Drops the ball. Why is Adam Page sticking his nose into the storyline? Why is Jay White sticking his nose into the storyline? Critical part. Christian Cage hits an unprettier on Moxley. Don't take advantage of it. Not taking advantage of what AEW is mirroring to WWE's Money in the Bank. He dropped him. Laying there. And now you got the other three knuckleheads running around. Makes no sense. Absolutely makes no sense. However, the finish of the pay-per-view has now Moxley and the rest of the Death Riders running for their lives. And Darby Allin smashes the truck, T-bones it with another car, goes apeshit after they conveniently abduct another vehicle that was sitting there running with the keys in it. Death Riders right away. Darby Allin's going ape shit. AEW goes off the air. There's a lot of weird cleanup after this group of people now sticking their nose where they don't belong. Okay, Christian Cage, maybe. Showing that he is there keeping an eye on the title picture. But no reason for Adam Page to be there. No reason for Jay White to be there. And you kind of have a botch ending to the freaking main event, which is now going to be like, where the hell were they going with this storytelling?
Didn't somebody in the match and attack Marina Shafir?
Yes, that would be Willow Nightingale, who's part of the conglomerate.
I thought so. Yeah, so the ending was pretty chaotic, yeah, but you know, Adam Page, Christian Cage, and then Jay White preventing Christian Cage from cashing in. Then they flee the arena, as you said, Darby Allin. I mean, I think right before I went off the air, Darby Allin was like kind of like...
I mean, he was standing on like the hood of the fucking pickup, smashing his skateboard into the windshield, which really didn't break. Like, I know in human life, really, that windshields break a little bit easier when you try to smash it with a skateboard. But it just goes to show at this point, again, now there's going to end up being another Jay White Hangman match. Somehow Christian's going to stick around, be like a ghost behind a wall waiting for some type of cash in, I guess, on whoever's going to win the title.
We're obviously waiting.
But you know, now Darby should be probably the next one that goes after Moxley at this point.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, yeah, it's obvious. It's Darby Allin.
Overall, once again, all I'm going to say is that 12 matches, 5.5 hours worth of wrestling. This is not WrestleMania. It's AEW. I have not been a fan of having 12 matches, 3 of them on the pre-show, and then you have another 9 on the main card. Gotta shorten this shit. Or make it that people will not lose steam while either being at the event or watching it on pay-per-view the way we did. Because we lost steam watching it. 20 minutes of Adam Page and frickin' Jay White, obscene. A women's title match that had no steam, obscene. Like, people lost it by the time they got there. And that's pretty much what I got to say about Full Gear.
What's the overall grade that you give the entire show?
7.9.
Okay.
Again, I do not agree with anything that, for example, Bleacher Report or Yahoo has to say. To me, it's kind of tainted. These are probably people that have no idea what a wrist lock is. They don't know how a proper ankle lock is probably put on. Hell, from my understanding, they probably don't even know what a body slam is. Or what the meaning of DDT is.
I mean, Bleacher Report said, I mean, they insisted that the match between Lashley and Swerve was a great match.
Totally disagree from not only a wrestling fan, but from an analyst point of view.
I mean, it's a shame because, you know, Swerve, you know, great wrestler, you know, great character, everything, you know, great run so far in AEW. And, you know, as far as Lashley goes, you know, we're hoping for the best, but yeah, it didn't go too well because, you know, as you said, I mean, Lashley, he, as you said, the key word in that, struggled. And this is not a knock on the guy. I mean, this is just based on what you saw. So.
And God forbid we have another big boom AJ versus QT Marshall thing. I would rather have my eyes gouged out and used in a salad bar than have to sit there through that menagerie of BS in the pre-show. Should have been smart and just turned it on at 8 o'clock.
Right. But yeah, I guess that's it. So, but overall, while you give it a 7.9, I think overall you were pretty disappointed, or you are disappointed.
Again, some of these matches are drawn out way too much. They're drawn out way too much. And if the crowd's not into it, you know how to end matches quicker. There's no reason to drag them out the entire length. You could put that time towards something else. Like, I guarantee you, even though Cassidy and Moxley was only a 19-minute spot, you could have put another 3-4 minutes into that, and I probably would have been happy with it. You probably could have put another 3-4 minutes into freaking Ospreay and oh, I can't remember his name. Let me go back again.
Oh, Fletcher? Hold on.
Yeah, Fletcher. Give me more flippy-dippy shit out of that one for an extra 3 minutes. Jay White and Adam Page is way too long. It was a death match. You were killing people because it wasn't entertaining. If you've got to put in if you've got to pipe in crowd noise, the match is not good. End it early. You're not required to go to midnight on a pay-per-view. I'm sorry. The card is way too long. It drags out way too much.
That it does. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Ringside Chaos is recap of AEW Full Gear 2024. And now we have Survivor Series to look forward to. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you can find Ringside Chaos wherever you get your podcast. So hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell. That way, Ricky and I know for sure that you're not going to miss out on any exciting upcoming content. Once again, Ringside Chaos has its own YouTube channel, and that's where all the new content is going moving forward, but all the old content is on the regular Bear of Texas channel. Ricky, thank you so much for coming on to recapping AEW Full Gear. I really appreciate it. I can't wait to recap the next pay-per-view with you, sir.
Oh, my God. I can't wait for Survivor Series. It's actually one of my favorite events out in WWE history. Recently, like I sent you that lovely little footage of the King having his little mini Kings running around the Survivor Series against Doink the Clown and the other little clown. Listen, I'm trying to not prolong this a little bit, but when we talk Survivor Series has had some of the most traditional things happen. We had The Undertaker debut at Survivor Series. The Gobbledygooker at Survivor Series. Some of the teams that they've had in Survivor Series are probably some of the most epic ones. The Ultimate Warrior teaming with the Road Warriors. And the Texas Tornado. Oh, man, I would go back and watch that. So Survivor Series does have a unique spot in my heart, and I cannot wait for Survivor Series.
Can't wait either. So ladies and gentlemen, Ricky, thank you very, very much. Everyone, have a good night and have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll see y'all next time.
Peace.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.